The English Civil Wars, the battle with Parliament, 1614 to 1625. Well, last week I talked about one of James's lovers, Robert Carr. I'll talk about a couple of the others, but then we're going to start seeing more trouble with the House of Commons. Now, James could now depend more and more upon his favorites. These were young men whose good looks were their only recommendation. The first of these, the man I talked about last week, was the Scotsman, Robert Carr. But he was replaced in 1614 by a man who would dominate James for the rest of his life. This was George Villiers. The son of a Leicestershire knight, honors and riches were poured upon him, and he became successively Earl, Marquis, and finally the Duke of Buckingham, the only commoner to be created a duke in the two centuries from Henry VII's accession to the restoration of Charles II. Now, the English nobles were bitter at the way in which the young upstarts, many of them Scottish, came to monopolize the high offices and places of profit. This was the beginning of the divorce between the crown and the House of Lords that was to remove the king's last hope of controlling Parliament. Elizabeth had kept on good terms with her nobles by letting them share in the profits of the government. The royal administration was full of survivals from the medieval past, and those fortunate enough to be appointed to such offices could draw a large income from fees and gifts while they were left all the work to a deputy. These were the golden bonds that tied the nobles and the more important gentry to the crown. But by James's reign, the pressure of bankruptcy was beginning to tell. There were fewer profits to be made, and the number of useless offices had been cut back by ministers such as Robert Cecil and Lionel Cransfield in a desperate attempt to make the administration pay its way. The result was a much greater competition for such profitable offices that survived, and the upper classes were split between the handful who shared in the pickings and the envious majority who were left like hungry spectators at a banquet. The court, which had in Tudor times been a magnet attracting ambitious and talented men from all ranks of society, became in James's reign a closed shop, and the king moved in a narrow circle of friends and spongers, out of touch the forces at work in the English life. The king's failure to give a clear lead in politics left the way open for other men. This is particularly true of the commons, where in the absence of effective royal counselors, a number of talented speakers led the house in attacks on the government. Coke and Sandys, Phillips and Hakewell, were the driving forces in the commons during the middle years of the reign of James. James was not entirely blind to the danger, but his crude attempt to influence the elections of 1614 was a pathetic failure. The addled Parliament, as it was called, lasted only 2 months and accomplished nothing. Rather than suffer the indignity of quarreling with another Parliament, James managed without one for 7 years. Fortunately for him, he found a financial wizard in Lionel Cranfield, who entered his service in 1618. Over the next 3 years, Cranfield pruned the king's expenditures and squeezed all he could out of every source of royal income. Half-forgotten feudal dues were demanded from the holders of royal lands. Forced loans were levied from the gentry. Monopolies were sold to the highest bidder. But Cranfield's efficiency ultimately led to his downfall. When Parliament at last met in 1621, the House of Lords and the House of Commons were united by anger and self-interest and revived the old device of impeachment. A prominent monopolist, Sir Giles Mompesson, was the first to be accused, and he only escaped perpetual imprisonment by fleeing to France. Flushed with success, the House of Commons accused the Lord Chancellor, Francis Bacon, of bribery and corruption. Bacon's high office made him one of the most prominent figures in the king's government, but it didn't save him. The Lords sentenced him to a heavy fine and forbid him from ever holding office. Finally, in 1624, Cranfield himself, now Earl of Middlesex and the Lord Treasurer, was impeached. He was sentenced to lose all his offices which he holds in the kingdom and shall thereafter be made incapable of any office, place, or employment in the state. In this dramatic fashion, the House of Commons called the king's ministers to account for their actions. They were not anti-royalist in intention. They simply wanted the king to work in harmony with them, by which they meant that he should ask for and accept their advice. and not simply call on them, pay for policies which they did not approve. Unfortunately, James, like his Tudor predecessors, was not prepared to be a mere figurehead. The abuses, like impositions and monopolies, of which the commons complained, were the king's last line of defense. Without them, he would be bankrupt and at the mercy of Parliament. Yet by clinging to them, he made cooperation with Parliament impossible. In addition, the House of Commons was passionate in the defense of what they considered to be their liberties, because they saw the power of the princes increasing daily on the European continent. There, the uneasy truce between Protestant and Catholic powers was coming to an end. In every country, rulers were raising armies and preparing for the struggle. They knew Parliament could not survive under those conditions. Only in Britain, where the frontiers were guarded by the sea, could subjects criticize their ruler, refuse to pay for a standing army, and yet hope to survive. So it's interesting to note that what we usually talk about, the English Civil War and this battle between the king and Parliament, and you go, well, what is the history of England is full of this give and take, but it's the continent. They were visibly aware of what was going on in the European continent. You've already seen such things as the French Wars of Religion between the Huguenots and the Catholics. And then you're going to have this 30 Years' War that is going to break out very, very shortly, that is going to just devastate Europe for the next 30 years. And what is taking place is the monarchs are getting more and more and more powerful. However, the French, they have a parliament, the Estates General, but that is only called in an emergency. In the Holy Roman Empire, the Diet can be called by the Holy Roman Emperor, but he's really not bound by it. So the House of Commons and the House of Lords are looking at situations where the kings in Europe have now finally broken out and are becoming, if not already, absolute monarchs. They will be absolute monarchs. And England's kind of in the past. They've never really developed that. There's been this relationship between the House of Commons and the House of Lords, but particularly the House of Commons and the king, trying to work out these different situations. But obviously, if you're a king of England and you're looking across the English Channel and you're seeing all these changes taking place, all of the what these other people can do and you can't, it's frustrating. And of course, it's frustrating for the House of Commons to have to constantly be beating back these challenges to their control, to the purse string, if you will, so that they don't just become an anachronism like the other parliaments in various parts of Europe. So it's a unique position. Now, the business with the other attendants, I mentioned him at the beginning, it's the Duke of Buckingham, Mr. Villiers. In The Three Musketeers by Alexandre Dumas, Louis XIII is concerned that his wife is having an affair with the Duke of Buckingham. And of course, the Duke of Buckingham, of course, is having a major affair with the King of England and is ultimately assassinated by his Puritan secretary, who was just aghast over his sexual activity with men. So to some extent, it's kind of a legend that the wife of Louis XIII was interested in the Duke of Buckingham. Now, the sources for this, History of England by Thorne, Lockyer, and Smith, Cavaliers versus Roundheads, English Civil War, 1642-1649 by Hibbert, English Civil Wars, 1640-1660 by Warden. So I hope you enjoyed that, and as always, don't forget to come by the website, summahistorica.com or historyaccordingtobob.com, and ask a question, leave a comment, check out the CDs, and if you like what we're doing, please feel free to support us. Thank you very much.